I would like to share with you just a very simple thought, and then really two stories. But I'll tell you why I think the stories are important. You know, in Parshas Shmos that we're going to read Shabbos, there is a very powerful lesson that the non-Jewish world, with all their familiarity with the Bible, have not learned. Hashem appears to Moshe Rabbeinu in the snare, and he tells him that the time has come, I want you to lead Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And he tells him what's going to happen, he'll go to Paro in the whole story. Then at the beginning of Perek Dalet, Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'hein lo yaminu li, v'lo yishmai li. They're not going to believe me, they're not going to listen to me. They're going to say, Hashem never spoke to you. So Hashem says, I'm going to give you three miracles to perform. With the to one the mate turning into a nochosh, and then the hand becoming mitzoras, and then water turning into dam, and that will give them the sense that it's for real what you say. You didn't just make up a story that Hashem spoke to you, but you can perform such miracles and show that Hashem is with you, which will give your statement credibility. But what we see from here is that private revelations are not credible. Anyone can claim whatever he wants. Hashem appeared to me. Oh, okay, tell me another one. Could say that. Every one of you could say that. And people will either believe you or not, but it's not really based on anything and not very credible. And it's very interesting that religions of the world have published and studied the Bible for 2,000 years, and yet they read this portion, they have it translated into their Bibles, and yet they don't get the point. They claim private revelation. Private revelation? It's not credible. Who would believe that? Who should believe that? Why should you believe that? A guy says, Hashem appeared to him. Who says? Miracles add some dimension to it. When Moshe Rabbeinu would do these three miracles, then people would say, hey, something's going on here. But the Rambam tells us that they really only knew beyond any doubt that Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking in the name of Hashem at Har Sinai. Because at Har Sinai, they heard Hashem speaking directly to them and directly to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is something that an entire nation heard, and they knew it. It wasn't that they saw a seemingly miraculous thing and they had to attribute it to Hashem. Here they heard Hashem speaking directly, and that's how they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was the appropriate Novi Hashem. That's what the Pasuk says, Hinei Anochi Bo Elecho Ba'avei Onon, Ba'avur Yishma'om Bedabri Imoch V'gam B'cho Yaminu Lo'ilom, that based on hearing Hashem speaking directly to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of the whole Klal Yisrael, now they know that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Novi Hashem. So miracles give us a lot of strength. It gives a Novi a lot of credibility. But the ultimate credibility, the ultimate knowledge, is because we heard Hashem speaking directly to the entire nation. And that, of course, they wrote it down in the Torah, and they passed it on from generation to generation as eyewitness testimony. But I want just to share with you two little stories, because I think that when we see the extent of Hashem's Hashgocha Protis in this world, we're really seeing miracles. And when we see miracles, it gives us a sense of chizuk, of appreciation, how much Hashem is truly involved in our lives. Two true stories that actually happened at different times, but let me share them with you. It was a couple, a number of years ago, that was driving along in New York, on Staten Island. That's one of the boroughs of New York City. And all of a sudden, they're passing a cemetery, and the wife says her parents are buried in that cemetery. She wants to stop. We just happened to pass by. They weren't planning to go there. But since we're passing by anyway, let's stop off and she'll go to the grave of her parents and say a kapitel tilim and so forth. Okay, they go. The husband notices that a few rows down, there's a funeral going on, a levaya, but it didn't seem that they had a minyan. In fact, to him it looked like they may have been short one person. Well, so he goes over there and he made the minyan, and very nice. But then he sees that after they said Kaddish, everybody left. They left the body in the grave, the mound of dirt on the outside, and they left it for the cemetery workers to fill it in, which is not a proper thing. It's not a covered for the mess, for the person who died. It should be filled in by his own people. Anyway, so this fellow, good guy that he was, all by himself, filled in the whole grave. Very, very difficult. Everybody knows, if you've ever been to a levaya, takes everybody there to do a little bit just to get it finished. He did it all by himself. Hard work. Took him an hour of really, you know, you can't do it without taking some breaks in between. And he buried this person, Kedasu Kedin. At the end, there's a little sticker there, a little, like a stick, something there with the name on it. He sees the name. He notes the name. Never heard the name before. Okay. Takes mental note. He buried this person. He's very happy he did a mitzvah. And he leaves. A few weeks later, he's talking to the menahel of the Baltimore yeshiva at the time, Rabbi Naftali Neuberger, who he studied in the Baltimore yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and he's telling Rabbi Neuberger about this strange thing that happened. He just happened to pass by, and his wife, the cemetery, and his wife wanted to go there, and happened to be a levaya. They needed him for a minyan, and then they all disappear and leave the body to be buried by the workers there. And he saved the day and with covered a mess and buried the body himself. And then he mentioned the name to Rabbi Neuberger, and it's as if he heard the telephone drop. And Rabbi Neuberger tells him in shock the following story. He says, when you came to the yeshiva many years ago, I think from someplace on the West Coast, he says, your father had just lost his job and your parents couldn't pay tuition. This man that you buried, he paid your tuition in the yeshiva all the years that you studied here in Eretz Yisrael. Think about that for a minute. Years before, a man, strange man, didn't know him at all. He never heard the man's name, he didn't know. He paid tuition for a needy student who couldn't afford to pay tuition. Many years later, this man's driving along in Staten Island with his wife, passing a cemetery where her parents are buried there. She decided she wants to go daven by the grave of her parents. He sees there's a levaya, there isn't a minyan. He goes there, and they all leave, and he decides to bury this total stranger all by himself. Who did he perform that chesed shel emes for? For the man who's responsible for his whole yeshiva education, who paid his tuition all the years. Look how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mesabiv v'sibos. That's one story. And every time we see, and I suggest we should look in our own lives and see Hashkocha Protis and hear from others Hashkocha Protis, is a tremendous source of chizuk. We know and we feel and we experience that Hashem is involved in every aspect of our lives. But let me tell you one story that I just heard a few moments ago. It's been documented also. There was a young rabbi who took a position at some shul, some place in the Midwest. The person did not want to reveal the name of the town. He was a young rabbi, and he came there, and he's ready to really work and do what he can. And he takes a look at the mikveh, and he sees something in the mikveh, the way the pipes were formed, that as far as he knew, he's not the expert, but as far as he knew, that this mikveh is not kosher. Something is wrong there. It's one small town with one mikveh. He calls up a Rav who's an expert in mikvahs, and he says to him what's going on there. He says, send me a picture. So let me see, I'll see what the story is. He sends him a picture. He's very disturbed by the picture. It doesn't seem to be right. Send me a few more pictures. He asked him for a couple more pictures. And he said to him, he says, the mikveh looks that this mikveh is posel. This is not a kosher mikveh. The thought was shocking and very, very disturbing to this young Rav, because this mikveh had been there for 50 years in this community. And if it wasn't built properly, that means every person who was tevil there was not tevil. Every gerus that was done there is not Jewish. And whatever else the mikveh was used for, what a tragedy. The whole community. He didn't know what to do. And he invited the rabbi to come. The rabbi said, I'll pay my own ticket. Come down. And he looked and he says, nothing you could do. The mikveh is and always was not a kosher mikveh. Like, tragedy of tragedies. He didn't know what to do. Who knows how many lives have been affected? How many people were hurt? How many people think they're Jewish and they're not? What in the world is he going to do? A terrible thing. But he knows that his father used to be the Rav in this community, and his father now is retired someplace in some warmer climate in the United States, and he went to visit his father. His father wasn't such a Talmud Chochem, and he starts asking his father about the whole history of the community, how did it start, what happened, this, that, the other thing. And finally he came to mention the mikveh. He says, no, please don't talk about the mikveh. What I went through for this mikveh, please don't remind me about it. But gently he starts to talk to him about it, and they begin to reminisce. And he says, I came to that community. There were no religious people there. They only had a minyan on Shabbos, but there was no mikveh. And I knew I had to build a mikveh. It wasn't a religious community, but there had to be a mikveh. And he says, but nobody wanted. They laughed at me. Oh, the rabbi's building a mikveh. Rabbi, we don't need a mikveh. What are you doing? He says, no, he's going to build. And he raised money. And finally, after months and months, he couldn't raise any money. He mortgaged his house. He says that his family for months only had bread and water. He tells his son, he says, you, when you were a little kid, you don't remember this. This was 50 years ago, whatever. I don't know how many years ago. He says, you didn't have what to eat. We were so poor, we mortgaged the house just to build the mikveh in the community. And he tells him the story. He says, we lived in the community. That community where we lived is a community where it always rains. It's one of the three places in the United States that has the most rain every year. It's practically always raining. He says, when I finally finished building the mikveh and we needed rainwater, then it didn't rain. A day, a two, a week, a month. 9 months. It didn't rain. It never happened in this community that it didn't rain. It rained every day or every other day or every week. 9 months, no rain. He says it never happened, such a thing. They didn't know. And he couldn't fill the mikveh with water. Now, finally, someone gave him an eitzah as he spoke to different rabbis. He says, bring ice, a truck full of ice to the boer. Put the ice in the main boiler, and the ice will melt, and you'll have a kosher mikveh. And that's what he did. Sure enough, he did that. As soon as that happened, the next Shabbos or whatever it was, a day later, says, rain, it didn't stop day and night, 24, 48 hours, just straight, torrential rains. And the people laughed at him again. They laughed at him again, and they said to him, look, you see how your God doesn't want a mikveh to be here? The whole time when you were making the mikveh in the place that it rains the most, it didn't rain for months and months and months and months, 9 months. And now as soon as you put the ice in the mikveh, all of a sudden it rains. He's showing you something, Rabbi, that you're making too big a big deal about this mikveh. Who needs it? And that was the end of the story. But what came out was the most amazing thing. The pipes weren't made properly. Had they been filled with rainwater, the mikveh would have been possible and remained that way. But because he filled it with ice, and the water remains there, they have other boiris, but the main bor with water, and there's a, such a way that the mikveh remained kosher, the ice water, the water that melted from ice was there all the years. And the 50 years of people using this mikveh for the regular tefillahs and for the gerus and everything else, it was all a kosher mikveh. It was made wrong. Had it rained and been filled with rainwater, this mikveh would have been posel and caused so many tragedies in the lives of all the people that relied on it. But it didn't rain. Miraculously, for so many months, it didn't rain in a place that never happens. So that the rabbi should finally get the idea to get ice. And that remained, though that ice bore, that bore with the water there remained all the time. And they just had other things in with. They have a way it's connected, so therefore it's kosher. And the mikveh was miraculously, because in the place where it never stops raining, it didn't rain for 9 months, and the mikveh was miraculously kosher. The rabbi, I guess, didn't know. He wasn't such a Talmud Chochem. But it turned out his son discovered that this mikveh, which was made inappropriately, was still kosher the whole time. I thought that these two stories, they're very, very interesting. They're very, it shows a tremendous sense of Hashgacha Pratis, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us in everything that we do in life, and He orchestrates all of these situations, and sometimes things seem so bizarre and so strange, but in reality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is orchestrating it all for our benefit, all for us, all because of the love that He has and the care that He has for everything in our lives. And when we study Hashgacha Pratis, when we see the extent of Hashem's involvement in our life, it gives us a tremendous chizuk. It gives us a tremendous sense of connection to Hashem. It shows us that not only did Hashem speak to Moshe Rabbeinu in the time of the Yetzias Mitzrayim and in the Midbar and Maimed Har Sinai, but Hashem talks to us in a language of action, not necessarily words, but in a language of action, showing us His involvement in our lives in so many, many, many different ways all the time. And when we realize that, we can truly feel that connection with Hashem. And when we dive into Hashem, sometimes we wonder, well, I talk to Him, He doesn't talk back. He talks in actions. His actions speak louder than words. The Hashgacha Pratis that Hashem provides us in our lives goes beyond anything that we can imagine and is truly the way Hashem responds to us in our tefillahs, in the good that we want to do, that we intend to do. Here's a rabbi who was Moisa Nefesh to build a mikveh, and the mikveh was posel. But because of the miraculous occurrence of no rain in the community for so many months, it turned out that the mikveh was really kosher, even though he had no idea about it. And here you have a man who paid the tuition of a young yeshiva bocha for all the years he was in the yeshiva because his parents couldn't afford to pay. And later on in life, he's being buried, or he's as a levaya, and this man makes the minyan so they could say a kaddish. And then they leave him to be buried by the workers, and this man single-handedly pays back the gift that this man had given him, the gift of life, the gift of a yeshiva education that this man had provided for him, completely unbeknownst to him. I'd like to conclude with just one little personal story, because I think that it sort of ties together our tefillos and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help. And it happens to be, it's a story that took place in Los Angeles many years ago. When we moved to the San Fernando Valley many, many years ago, my children were young, and they were in a day camp for the summer. And my oldest daughter must have been about 8 years old at the time, and it's about 10:30 at night, and she has to go to camp the next day, and day camp, and they were going on a trip. She asked me, she wants 75 cents to be able to buy a soda. So I said, I don't have 75 cents. And I didn't have 75 cents. I didn't have more either, I didn't have. Things were tight those days. She said, what should I do? 75 cents, I need it, it's hot. You know what, Los Angeles, the heat could be in the summer. I need something to drink. So have to say Tehillim. Say Tehillim. Well, she wasn't too happy with the idea. She didn't, like, you know. She sits down with her younger sister and they're saying Tehillim. And then in the middle, my daughter says, I don't get it. It's 10:30 at night. I'm leaving the house at 7:30 in the morning. You know, how's this going to help me get the money? I need the money now. And the little kid says, maybe someone will give it to you, maybe something. I don't know. What's it? Nothing. She left the next day without the money. She comes back with a smile and a story. She says, when she went to camp that day, a friend of hers who had borrowed 75 cents from her at the Purim Carnival. So we're talking July and August. The Purim Carnival was 3 months, 4 months before. She says, that friend woke up that morning and remembered something they never spoke about since then, that she owes this girl 75 cents. And she brings it with her to camp. And she had her money for her soda. Hashem shows us that He answers our tefillos. He answers with action. He answers not with words. He doesn't speak back to us, but actions speak louder than words. And the more that we can connect with Hashem's involvement in our lives, the more that we draw closer to Him, we can have a deeper relationship with Him, we can appreciate that relationship with Him. And through our tefillos, through our heartfelt tefillos, through knowing that Hashem does respond to our tefillos, we can be zeicher that Hashem will grant us all mishalos libeinu l'toivo, all that we ask of Him. And Hashem shetaka help that all of our tefillos and all of your tefillos, especially in times like this, the situation I know in terms of the COVID is very, very serious in Los Angeles. It's serious in so many places. And Kodesh Baruch Hu should accept our tefillos. We should continue to beseech Him to help us, to help those that are sick, to help those that are well, not to get sick, and to remove this entire magefa from us. And we should be able to go back to a normal living and be able to appreciate life and continue developing in Torah and in Midas and to do the Avodas Hashem as it's supposed to be done in the fullest way. Hashem should give everybody Hatzlocha and Brocha and Kol Tov, continue to be Matzliach. Kol Tov, good night. Good night, Kol Tov.
Does Rebbe have a minute? Maybe if someone has a question.
I'm in no rush. My day is finished. That's it. It's the end of the day.
Anyone have any of the Chashuv Bachurim or any question that they would like to ask?
So Rebbe was talking about that.
For a minute, okay?
What?
Introduce, just say your name. So.
Nuriel Suleiman Tehrani. So I just had a quick question that I was talking about how Moshe Rabbeinu was at Sinai and he was going through the Nevuah that he gave to the Jews. So how does that connect to that the tefillah can be answered? Even though the fields could be answered through like hashgacha and through actions, like that Sinai wasn't really answered. Like what were the fields that were answered through?
Okay, very good. I see that you're training your guys well in terms of how to learn and how to keep the cheshbon. That's beautiful. So I'll tell you what I meant to say. I just mentioned Maimon Har Sinai because the Rambam says that the real knowledge that they had, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Novi Hashem, only happened when they heard Hashem saying it Himself. But there was a temporary level of knowledge when Moshe said, Hashem appeared to me, and he did three Nisim. So I brought out that Nisim can have a limited effect, a minimal effect, a temporary effect on a person recognizing that Hashem is involved with the situation. And ultimately, when they stood at Har Sinai, then they had the fullest appreciation because they heard for themselves. So I just meant to bring out that Nisim, seeing Nisim, gives us a sense of the extent of Hashem's involvement. That Moshe Rabbeinu providing those Nisim was able to temporarily at least, or tentatively, prove to them that Hashem had actually spoken to him. So then I went off to say how we have to focus on Hashgacha Pratis, which are the Nisim Nistorim, the Ramban calls them, in our lives, and that will give us a greater sense of connection and appreciation of Hashem. That was the whole thing. So I only mentioned Maimon Har Sinai because that was not the ultimate recognition of Moshe Rabbeinu as the Novi Hashem only came when they heard Hashem appointing him directly. Until then, the Nisim provided some temporary basis for them to go along with it until they came to the greater level, which was Hashem speaking directly to them and to Moshe Rabbeinu in front of them. That's all. But the question is very well taken in terms of what was the connection, and I'm very impressed. Thank you very much. Anything else?
I have a question.
Okay.
This is Avram Wyckoff. If this is like a sign that they weren't expected to believe Moshe just because he came and said, "Oh, God spoke to me." But why were they expected to believe Moshe even once he came and did those miracles? Because that's what a lot of the prophets of like supposed prophets of a lot of other nations, they claim that God came to them and spoke to them. So why does the fact that Moshe did miracles and stuff like that make any difference?
Well, first of all, the prophet people that claim that Hashem spoke to them, if they don't do miracles, as is in the normal or most of the situations, in fact, in most of the situations, even when they claim miracles, they only claim somebody saw it, one person saw it, a few people saw it, many people saw it, but only one person came and told us that many people saw it. So those things are not very credible. When you talk about a private revelation, it's not very credible. To those that hear from the prophet who says, "I had this private revelation," and he does in front of them miracles that they could see, that gives them a certain level of trust in him. When they by the time they went through the Yam Suf, the Torah says, "V'yaminu b'Hashem u'v'Moshe Avdoi." They believed in Moshe Rabbeinu, that he was the Novi Hashem, because he told them, go into the Yam and everything's going to be all right. But the ultimate appreciation of Moshe as a Novi, the ultimate appreciation of anything when it has to do with Hashem, is not from what we see, the miracles that he does, but rather when they heard him speaking directly to Moshe Rabbeinu and letting them know that Moshe Rabbeinu is his man, is his teacher, is his prophet, is his messenger. So that's, I think, is what the difference is. We find in the nations of the world, they don't, even if they talk about miracles, they don't talk about eyewitness miracles. And they don't claim that there was a public revelation. And do you know the reason that they never made up that there was a public revelation? Do you have any idea?
Because you can't convince people that they saw something that they
you
didn't.
Can't. That lie is too great to perpetrate. You can lie and say you had a private revelation. Nobody knows the difference. Maybe yes, maybe no. You can't tell people that they witnessed miraculous events. Many people, if it never happened. So that's why they never copied such a thing.
But it was common at the time, like Paro's magicians, they were all able to do similar miracles. So like black magic.
Yeah, well, that's the reason the Rambam says that the miracles are not convincing enough. These miracles were somewhat convincing because Moshe Rabbeinu's was able to devour theirs, and there were things they weren't able to do. But Lemaisa, that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that if you believe in a Novi, it's the Rambam, you could look it up, it's in Perek Ches, in Yesod HaTorah. He says, if you believe in a Novi based on miracles, there's always some element of doubt. Maybe he was one of those, like the magicians that were able to do certain things. But what? How do we know Moshe Rabbeinu was the Novi? Because einenu shol ro'u v'lo ya'achev, as einenu shom, and our ears heard. Ha'eish v'ha'koilos v'ha'lapidim, v'moshe nigash elu ha'rofel, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke directly to him in front of the whole nation. And that's how we know. When it was a public revelation, then everybody knows what happened.
Didn't Klai Yisrael know that Moshe was in charge because they were like certain simanim, like there was a Masera from...
Okay, but I guess that, you know, that this, that still wasn't strong enough. The ultimate thing was what you, not this simanim, you know, bonim adifim is simanim. Simanim are good. Rachel gave a simanim to Leah. You know, simanim only go so far. But when you heard yourself, an entire nation, hears Hashem speaking, that's a whole different story. Okay.
Ready?
Anything else?
Just wondering, according to that idea of the Rambam, why is it that the, I guess the Mitzrayim and the Goyim really only recognized Moshe's credibility at Har Sinai, why not the Makos? Why didn't they have the same impact of
Why? Who didn't have? I didn't hear you.
Why didn't, it sounds like according to the Rambam, it was only at Har Sinai that Moshe the world really recognized
that's
that
right.
Moshe
okay.
was the Navi Hashem.
Okay.
So why weren't the Makos enough to really...
So that's what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that the Makos were, the Torah says, Ve'aminu b'Hashem uve'Moshe avdoi, but ultimately you could still think, maybe, I don't know, I didn't hear Hashem directly, I surmised it from the Makos, maybe somebody else can come and do a miracle and then it will contradict it. There's room, he says, Yesh achareo hiru machshova. Doesn't mean that it's not convincing. The Torah says, Ve'aminu b'Hashem uve'Moshe avdoi. But there's still room for the possibility that maybe there's some trick here. Maybe I'm missing something. Not so when the entire nation hears Hashem speaking directly to them and directly to Moshe Rabbeinu in earshot where they can hear. That's something that you just can't. You can't fabricate. They know when that happens, an entire nation knew that Hashem was speaking directly to them. So that has much more power and credibility.
Excellent. Thank you,
Rabbi. Okay.
We never saw Hashem speak to Moshe.
What's that?
No.
I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
How could we didn't see Hashem speak to Moshe, have that same level of Emunah and Bitachon?
Okay, so the answer is very, very, it's simple. I mean, the simple answer is it may not be the same level, you know, obviously, if we were at Har Sinai, but the system with which that was passed on to future generations is an amazing system, because that generation, Moshe Rabbeinu, was dictated from Hashem a Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah does not say these events took place. The Sefer Torah says the people there that pass it on to the next generation, they saw these events. Atem ra'isim ki min ha'shamayim dibarti imochim. Atem ra'isim ma'asosisi b'mitzrayim. Hishom alecho shvor nafshecho pentishkach ma'shero einecho. Therefore, the Torah is written in an eyewitness testimony form, and it was passed down to the next generation. Every Shevet had their own Sefer Torah. It was read publicly. They lived by it. They, throughout the millennia, died for it. And it's been passed down accurately to this very day, wherever we find Sifrei Torah. And not only that, wherever we find translations, which were done by the Umas Olam, we find the same Sefer Torah. And our Sefer Torah, the words are the same. The Teimanim were separated from the Ashkenazic Jews for close to 2,000 years, and we came back together in Eretz Yisrael, and practically, other for Cheseris and Yeseris, and maybe one Aleph or a Hey that was different, and it didn't make a difference in the meaning or the pronunciation, same Sefer Torah. How could it be? Thousands of years. You know, there was a rabbi in Hollywood, Florida, who told me that he used to bring, he's retired now, but he used to bring a Hasidish Sofer to fix his Sifrei Torah in the Young Israel there every couple of years. And the Sofer once told him that when he comes down, the Reform Rabbi also has him come to the temple to check his scrolls. So he once asked the Reform Rabbi, he says, why do you need a guy like me, you know, a Hasidish Sofer, to come down and check your scrolls? Like, you know, what does this mean to you? He says, I want to tell you something. Those scrolls are the only genuine thing I have in this temple. I want to make sure they stay that way. Even the Reform, with all the things that they denied and they negated and this, nobody ever changed the Sefer Torah. It's been passed on like that for thousands of years. And that's Eidus. But the Eidus is not only in the text. It's a very strange kind of Eidus, because we live that Eidus too. We live our lives according to the directives of that text. We still perform today all the miracles, all the mitzvahs that were, as they were told to us in the Torah. We put on the same tefillin and the tzitzis and the mezuzah and the sukkah and the lulav and the esrog and the Shabbos and the yontif. Thousands of years, the same. It's written testimony, it's oral testimony, and it's living testimony. I once gave a seminar on the West Coast. John Wayne Airport around that area. They're down south a little bit towards San Diego. I don't remember exactly, someplace on the West Coast, and I remember that I came a little bit late, so I wasn't too familiar with the people. And I was explaining something about the Masorah and about the public revelation and about the way the Torah was passed on and all the evidence that we have. And there was a woman standing over there, I remember, and she was asking a question. I thought she didn't understand what I was saying. So I said to her, let's suppose for a moment you were a judge in a California court. And everybody started to laugh. And I said, what are you laughing about? She says, she's a judge in a California state court. So I says, wonderful, Your Honor, tell me. With the evidence that I have presented, did I prove my case beyond any reasonable doubt? Because that's all any case is to be proven. Once you go beyond, if you try for a shadow of a doubt, then you'll always see shadows. Beyond any reasonable doubt, that's why we eat, that's how we drink, that's how you know your mother is your mother. Only beyond reasonable doubt. Nothing more than that. Could have been exchanged in the hospital. So anyway, so she says to me as follows. She says, I must tell you that with far less evidence than you have provided, you have, in my courtroom, it would have been proven beyond reasonable doubt that God gave the Torah at Har Sinai to the Jewish people, and it was passed down accurately. Yes, she wasn't a religious woman, but this was it's extremely powerful. Anyway, we should be very happy. We should be very proud of what we have, and hopefully we should be able to continue to start to learn again normally. I don't know what your matzav is over there in terms of you're in class, you're out of class. I don't know what goes on. You have a camp. I don't know what you have over there. But whatever it is, we should all be with Hatzlocha. And Hashem should help that things should get back to normal. Okay? Be well. Kol tov. Take care. Good night. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.